Lecture 30, Ramses the Great, the Early Years.
Hi. If you remember last time, we talked about Seti I, and he's the first great king of the 19th dynasty. Well, I mentioned before that his son is going to become Ramses the Great, one of the greatest pharaohs Egypt ever saw. And I want to talk about Ramses the Great. I want to talk about the early years. Seti, of course, as all kings eventually do, dies and is buried in a beautiful tomb in the Valley of the Kings. Has a wonderful astronomical ceiling, really quite something. But before he died, he had prepared his son to become king of Egypt. And young Prince Ramses' early days suggest he was going to be a great king. Now, first, little Ramses, and this is not unusual, went on military campaigns with his father. Probably maybe only 8, 9 years old, 10 years old, and he goes on military campaigns. He was probably kept at a safe distance, you know, a couple of soldiers around him to make sure he was okay. But he saw what fighting was about. There are scenes carved on temple walls by Seti showing young Ramses next to dad's chariot. He wasn't in the middle of battle, but it was a good picture. It was good propaganda. Now, another thing that indicates that Ramses was being groomed real early to be king. If you remember, he had a brother who died, so he's the only son of Seti I, Ramses. Only son. But he's called the eldest son. What that means is he's crown prince. They're sort of emphasizing this kid is going to be king of Egypt, right? So he's called eldest son, even though he's the only son. Also, if you remember, when Seti built his temple at Abydos, the sacred city, he had a hall of the ancients where he had all the cartouches of his ancestors. And right next to Seti, performing a ritual in that hall, is young Prince Ramses, Ramses the Great. He also, you can always tell when he's a prince, he's got a side lock of youth. Young children in Egypt wore a side lock down the side of their head, and when you finally reached maturity, they would cut it off, and then you became an adult. Right? So Ramses is up and coming. Now, as a teenager, maybe probably 15, 16, something like that, he's not quite yet king yet, he took two wives. Not unusual to marry that early. He was a prince, right? And he has two wives. One is Nefertari, not to be confused with Nefertiti, right? Nefertiti was the wife of Akhenaten, the heretic pharaoh. Nefertari is the wife of Ramses the Great. Nefertari, it's a beautiful name. It means Nefer is beautiful or good, and it means the beautiful one has come. Right? So it's a nice name. And you'll see, by the way, Ramses really loved her. His other wife, Isnofret, another nice name, something like the beautiful Isis, something like that. So he has two wives. Nefertari is the honcho, the great wife, and Isnofret. And they have five sons and two daughters. Nefertari, her son, the eldest son, is the crown prince. Amun-Her Kepshef is his name. Amun-Her Kepshef. Names are great. Amun, the god Amun. A Kepshef is a sword, a kind of sickle-shaped sword. And Her means a pawn, so it's Amun is upon my sword. Right? This kid's going to be a warrior, named a kind of military name. Amun-Her Kepshef is the son by Nefertari, is going to be, hopefully, king of Egypt. Other sons by Isnofret are going to be very important kids, very important. One son, Chaim Waset, he will be the high priest of Memphis. He will also be the first archaeologist that we know of. He is the first archaeologist in recorded history. Interesting guy. He was concerned, Chaim Waset, the son of Ramses the Great. Chaim Waset was concerned that the pyramids, which are, of course, ancient now, as you know, right? They're 1,000 years old. He was concerned that people wouldn't know who the pharaohs were who built the pyramids. So he went around labeling them. And, for example, if you remember back to the 5th dynasty, the Pyramid of Unas, the first pyramid to have pyramid texts, if you go to that pyramid, there's a big hieroglyphic inscription on the outside of the pyramid. Now, most tourists, of course, they can't read it, and they figure it's from the time of Unas. No, it's Chaim Waset saying, I restored this pyramid, taking credit for it. So, in a sense, he creates the first museum labels in history, saying, this pyramid, this guy, this kid, right? Archaeologist. He also is the one who builds the Serapeum, the sacred place for the burial of the Apis bulls at Memphis. And he's high priest at Memphis. So this is quite a kid. Quite a kid, Hiawassee. But we'll talk about him later. Now, there are other children that are important, right? But Merenptah, a brother of Hiawassee. Now, Merenptah is only the 13th son of Ramses the Great. Right? Ramses had a lot of kids, as you will see. He had probably 52 sons, even, maybe the number. 52 sons, maybe almost an equal number of daughters. 100 kids. A lot of wives, of course. Merenptah is only the 13th son. But he's going to become king of Egypt. Ramses is going to live so long, into his 80s. He's going to rule for 67 years, that many of his children will die before him. So we have lots of important sons we know about, and Amenherkepchef won't last long enough to become king. Hiawassee won't. It's going to be the 13th son, Merenptah. But let's talk about young Ramses. First, when he finally does become king, now he's trained with the military. He's gone out on campaigns with Dad. He's not afraid. When he's trained with the military, but he takes his names as Pharaoh. Now, when you're Pharaoh, you take new names. And every Pharaoh had five names, five, associating himself with the different gods and goddesses. If you look at Ramses' names, you just know he's going to be a military man. Let's talk about the five names of Ramses the Great. First, you have a Horus name, the name that associates you with the falcon god. If you'll remember, way back in the archaic period, like First Dynasty, that was the only name pharaohs had. The Horus name was important. And his name is Horus, Strong Bull, Beloved of Truth. So Strong Bull. That's his Horus name. The next name is called the Two Ladies name. Why two ladies? Two of the earliest goddesses, Nekhbet and Budo, they were it's a vulture and a cobra for Upper and Lower Egypt. They're called two ladies. This is why on Tutankhamun's crown, for example, you will see a vulture and a cobra coming out of the forehead, protecting, signs of royalty. Right? So every pharaoh had a two ladies name associating himself with these two early goddesses. And his was protector of Egypt who subdues foreign lands. Right? Again, military. Then there was a golden Horus name, associating the king with a Horus of gold. Ramses' golden Horus name? Rich in years, great in victories. Both were true. Both would be true. He would live many years, and he would win many victories. Right? His fourth name, now we're coming to the two names that are written in cartouches. Remember, only two of these five names are written in cartouches. Right? One is the name that says he's king of Upper and Lower Egypt. Strong in right is Re. That's his name. Strong in right is Re. Powerful. That's the image he wants to give. That name, by the way, in Egyptian, User Mat Re. Strong in might. User Mat Re. Remember it. You'll see why in a little bit. User Mat Re. And then his last name, also written in a cartouche, which says Son of Re. He is son of the sun god. Ramses II. Beloved of Amun, right? Ramses, beloved of Amun. Ramses, beloved of Amun. Those are his five names, so powerful names. The name Ramses, by the way, Ramesses. Ra is the sun god. Mesis is born. Ra is born. That's what his name means. That's why you have so many pharaohs named with Moses at the end. Tuthmosis, Toth is born. Yamosis, the moon god, Ia, is born. All of these are typical Egyptian names. The gods are born. This is why, even when we'll talk about the Exodus later, you will see that the name Moses is not a Hebrew name. Mm-mm. It's pure Egyptian. It means birth. But we'll talk about Exodus later. So Ramses has these five names. Powerful man. But it's not just names. He builds. He fights. He does everything. The first thing he does is complete his father's temple at Abydos. Right? Seti died before it was completed. So he goes to the sacred city and completes his father's temple. But he does something quite interesting, which shows his ego. The temple of Seti was dedicated to many gods, if you remember. So it had quite a few doorways. Ramses bricks up these doorways. Bricks them up with stone. So he'll have room to carve his own name on the doorways and carves his exploits on the doorways of his father's temple and says it is a good son who completes his father's monument. Right? So he, in a sense, he completes his father's monument but takes a lot of credit for himself. So he goes to Abydos and completes his father's temple. But he also builds his own temple at Abydos behind Dad's. So he's got his own temple there. He also completes the hypostyle hall that Seti, his father, had begun. And if you go to the hypostyle hall today, you will see it with Ramses' name on it. You're not going to see Seti's name all over it. Ramses loved to put his own name. We sometimes call Ramses the great chiseler because he carved out so many other people's names and put his own on. We call him the great chiseler. But he builds. Now, military. That's where it's at for Ramses. Year 5 of his reign, 5th year as king of Egypt, he marches out to Syria. This is going to be the battle that will make his reputation for life. Now, Ramses is going to rule for another 62 years. Rules for 67 years, but in the 5th year of his reign, he fights a battle that he will talk about for another 6 decades. The Battle of Kadesh. It's in Syria. And as I mentioned, his father had gone there and conquered. It's a long march. As you know from when we talked about the military, it's about 15 miles a day, right? Marching to Syria. You go through the Bekaa Valley. You see flowers these guys had never seen before. You know, wildflowers. We have the details of this battle. Let me tell you about this battle. We have so many details of this battle. Ramses talked about it so much, carved it on so many temples. This is the best recorded event in ancient history. There is no other historical event of which we have so much detail and so many accounts. Right? Ramses really liked it. He's marching out, right? He, of course, isn't marching. He's in his chariot. The infantry's marching. And there were 4 military divisions, we are told. We know they divided themselves into military divisions. They are named after the gods. There's one for Amun, one for Re, one for Ptah. Right? So we have Amun for Thebes. Re is the solar god. Right? His name is Ramses. Right? Amun, Re, Ptah for Memphis, the other capital of Egypt. And Seth. Seth. Remember, his father is Seti I. Right? So Seth is taken care of too. We have 4 divisions. 5,000 men each. Right, so we've got about 20,000. We've got chariots, we've got archers, and they're marching north to Syria. Town after town they go through, they simply take. No resistance, no problem for an army like this. And understand, moving 20,000 men is not easy. Anybody in the military knows that. You've got supply problems. That's the big one. How do you feed 20,000 men? You can't carry enough food. If you're moving with donkeys as your pack animal. A donkey can carry maybe enough food for 2 days for itself and its rider. No way. You have to forage where you're going. Take whatever the land has. And that's what they did. So they're marching north, right? Even wells are a problem. You know, if you have an army of 20,000 and you come to a town where there are 4 wells, you'll die of thirst. You cannot water 20,000 people quickly enough from a few wells. So you had to know what you were doing. And you planned your time, right? So he's marching north to Kadesh. Now, Ramses is nearing Kadesh. And it's a dramatic story told by Ramses. We don't know exactly what the truth is, but let me give you the official Egyptian account, and then we'll talk about it. Ramses is leading his army. Now, he's young, remember. Year 5, you know, 23, who knows how old, you know, 24, max. And he's leading the army. He's been out on campaign, so he's not afraid. He's leading the army. And they're nearing Kadesh. As they near Kadesh, 2 locals come up to him, join the camp. Right? 2 locals. And they say to Ramses, you know, we want to join your camp. They want to join Ramses' camp. And Ramses has them interrogated. He says, where's the enemy? Now, the enemy, Mutwalis, he's a Hittite, right? The Hittites controlled Kadesh from all the way from Turkey. They controlled Syria. He says, where's the enemy? And these two guys say, well, they heard you were coming, Ramses the Great, and they fled north. They're 100 miles north. Right? In truth, Mutwalis had 40,000 troops, 2,500 chariots hidden in the woods, a little bit north, near Kadesh. Ramses believes these guys. Makes sense to him. They're afraid of me. And he proceeds ahead of his army. Now, when you've got 20,000 men, you can't march together. It's too many. You usually divide up among divisions, and you've got maybe 5,000 moving ahead. That's plenty. And they sometimes camp as much as a day apart because they've got to get their own food, water. You can't just supply everybody at once. Ramses, hearing that the enemy's not near, charges on ahead on his own. Right? He's got one division with him, right? And he's marching to Kadesh. What Ramses doesn't know, of course, is Mutwalis is waiting. Right? Waiting. Ramses goes on ahead. Behind him, the division of Ray is attacked. Attacked. Right? They're in real trouble. Ramses marching on sets up camp. Right? He sets up camp. And we have descriptions of what's happened. We have pictures of the camp that Ramses actually set up. Remember I told you once before they put their Egyptian shields to form a wall? That's what they did. And it's a wonderful scene on the walls. You can see guys repairing chariots, carrying supplies. You can see Ramses' pet lion. He went into battle with his lion. Right? They're setting up camp, and they find two spies from Mutwalis, and they beat the truth out of these guys, that Mutwalis is in the woods. But it's too late. The Hittites attack the camp, and it's all confusion. They're not ready for battle. They're outnumbered. Everybody's scattering. Ramses says, what, are you afraid? He says, I'll fight them by myself. Right? Myself. And he jumps in his chariot. And he counterattacks the Hittites. Now, we don't know exactly what happens. The description is pretty much that Ramses, with very few people behind him, repels the Hittites. Ramses saves the day. Everybody's panicking, and Ramses says, don't worry. I've got Amun behind me. Right? And he charges. Hittites retreat. And there are even scenes of the Hittites retreating. Wonderful. Now remember, this is Kadesh in Syria. They're right near the Orontes River. And the Hittites are pushed back across the Orontes by Ramses. And there's a scene on a temple wall that Ramses later carved of a prince of Aleppo, right, in Syria, who was fighting with the Hittites. And the guy almost drowned in the river, and it shows them holding him upside down so the water's coming out of him. Right? They're shaking the water out of this prince of Aleppo. So anyway, Ramses saves the day. The rest of the troops come north and join the camp. Now, it's nightfall. Egyptians did not fight battles at night. Right? Ancient world in general, you did not fight at night. So you're going to wait for the next day. But at least now, Ramses and his troops, they know that Mutwalis is there on the other side of the river. Day breaks, and there is a battle between the Egyptians and the Hittite forces for Kadesh. The best that we can determine from the records we have, and it's only one-sided, is it was a standoff. Mutwalis had the numbers, had outnumbered Ramses. Ramses' men were really trained, skilled. It was a standoff. Nobody won. There are scenes of the battle, and there are ways of telling the good guys from the bad guys. Remember I told you once about the round-top shields, as the Egyptians, the other guys? Well, chariots also. Egyptians always have two guys on a chariot. Hittites have three. They've got a bigger chariot. They have a spear thrower, too. They've got a guy. So you can tell pretty clearly who's who, what's happening. And it was a standoff. And Ramses is offered, right, is offered a peace treaty. He refuses. He won't take a peace treaty. He will only take a temporary truce. Now, what's the difference? Well, one is a long-term thing where you say, well, we're not going to fight anymore. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Ramses says, no. He said, we'll take a truce, but I'm going to be back. Right? So Ramses refuses a treaty and returns to Egypt. Now, this is a battle that becomes the equivalent of George Washington crossing the Delaware. It is carved on every temple Ramses builds. It is spoken about for years about how Ramses, as an individual, the king leading his army, saved the day. Right? And it's probably, there's probably some truth in it. There is. Because there were a lot of soldiers coming back with Ramses. And if he hadn't done something pretty brave, there would have been talk. So I think Ramses really did do something great. Maybe not as great as he said, but it's good. So Ramses, early on in his career, establishes himself as a great military leader. Now, what about his building? Right? Various ways that Pharaoh wanted to show he was great. One of the strategic things Ramses does, and it's important, is he moves the capital of Egypt. Now remember, there are two capitals really. Thebes is the religious capital. And Thebes, by the way, is what the Greeks called it. That's not what the Egyptians called it. The Egyptians called ancient Thebes Waset. It's a scepter. It means power. It was the place of power, Waset. So the ancient Egyptians called it Waset. The Greeks, when they came in, called it Thebes. And the modern Egyptians called it Luxor. There was the religious capital at Thebes and the administrative capital at Memphis. But Ramses moves the administrative capital from Memphis to the Delta. Now, why? To Kantir, actually. It's modern Kantir. It's called P. Ramses, the city of Ramses. Why? Because the Delta is more strategic if you're a military man. It's difficult to imagine what being a military man was like. I mean, you had a plan for going through deserts, marching endlessly. And if you're going through the Delta, you could have store cities built there. It's a place where you can move out north towards Syria, and Ramses intended to go to Syria often. So it was strategically better placed for a military man. That's why he wants his palace in the Delta. Now, in addition to this Delta area, and it's a strange area to see today because you know the Delta's moist, so most of the site is sunken underground. You can still see places where Ramses, you know, built those. It's amazing. Big stones still lie on the ground. But anyway, in addition to the palace, he builds his famous temple at Abu Simbel. Now, if you'll remember, the border of Egypt ended at Aswan in the south. Ended there. Abu Simbel is south of Aswan, in Nubia. In Nubia. And Abu Simbel, which is the modern name for it, Abu Simbel is a unique temple. Nothing like it had ever been built. Ramses has a new technique. Normally a temple is built out of blocks, built one on top of the other, very much like you build a brick house. Ramses carved the temple of Abu Simbel out of the mountain, out of the living rock. In the front of this temple, carved out of the mountain, are 4 67-foot-high statues of Ramses the Great. Four of them. And you enter the temple between the legs of the innermost two. When you look at the temple today, one of the statues' heads is on the ground. It fell during an earthquake. During the life of Ramses, after it had been built, there was an earthquake, and the head fell down. Right? Now, this temple is a great piece of propaganda. Let me explain why I say propaganda. No large number of people ever lived there. This was Nubia, not Egyptian soil. Egyptians weren't going to live there for a long time. This was to show, if you were a Nubian, sailing northward on the Nile into Egypt, you would have to pass this big, big temple with 67-foot statues of Ramses looking down on you. Now, if you were brave enough to get off your boat and look around inside the temple, as you go inside the temple, right on the walls, just at the entranceway, are bound captives. Nubians. Nubians. It's a statement. It's a political statement. Then, if you're brave enough to go inside, you will see Ramses winning the Battle of Kadesh. Wonderful scenes. The Orontes River circling the town. Pretty impressive stuff. And then, going all the way into the Holy of Holies, what do you have? You got four statues. The gods. Right? You got Re Harachthi, you got Ptah, you got Amun, and you got Ramses the Great. Right there with the gods. Same size. So you've got Ramses as a god. And the temple is designed beautifully so that twice a year, the sun shines all the way into the Holy of Holies and illuminates the statues. Right? Special day. Many people feel it was on Ramses' birthday. It was designed so that on Ramses' birthday, the sun would illuminate those statues of Ramses with the gods. Incredible. Now, to build this temple was a major effort. Nothing like it had ever been done. Imagine how they did it. You had to have guys on scaffolds coming from the top of the mountain, and they would put down a grid work. They would take big buckets, probably of red paint, paint the red line, the grid, and then the sculptors would come hanging and carve out these statues, all for propaganda. But this is not the only, this is not the only temple there. Ramses also built a second temple, just to the right of it, for his wife, Nefertari, the beautiful Nefertari. And above the doorway, it has a lovely inscription. It says, Nefertari, she for whom the sun does shine. It's nice, isn't it? So they have his and her temples, sort of his and her temples in Abu Simbel. It's amazing. Also, by the way, you should know that these are temples that were moved by UNESCO. Remember, when the Aswan Dam was built, it backed up the waters of the Nile, forming Lake Nasser. And Abu Simbel was going to be flooded. So many countries combined under UNESCO to move the temple rather than lose it underwater. And they cut it into blocks, large blocks, you know, like 20-ton blocks. And these blocks were moved to higher ground. It's on the same island, so to speak, on the mainland of the Nile, same spot, just higher up. And it's positioned, by the way, so that the sun still shines in on the same days on Ramses the Great. It's quite a temple. It's really, really something. And by the way, there was an interesting discussion when they were moving the temple. What do you do about the head that's on the ground? Should you put it back? They could have put it back. They could have had metal rods, pin it in. They decided to leave the head still on the ground, the one fallen head of the four statues, because that's the way it was in ancient times, and that's the way they're going to leave it. So the head is still on the ground. And when you visit the temple, and you all should visit it, you can't even see the lines. They did such a good job of moving the temple. It's hard to see that it was rebuilt. Right? But that's one temple that Ramses the Great built. Now, another important monument that he builds is the Ramesseum, it's called. It's his mortuary temple. It's where Ramses would be worshipped for centuries to come. And what's important about this temple is that he had a colossal statue there, probably two colossal statues. Big, big statue out of granite, beautiful statue, but it's terribly ruined, from an earthquake probably and other things. Right? But this is the statue in the Ramesseum that Shelley wrote the poem Ozymandias about, you know, which talks about the King of Kings, look upon my monuments in despair. The idea is that I was pretty great, but look at my monument. You know, all that's left is this visage, you know, this face. This is the statue that Shelley wrote about. Right? But, you know, Shelley had never seen it. He'd never been to Egypt. He'd never seen the statue. He'd heard about it. But he wrote a wonderful poem about it. And the reason it's called Ozymandias, if you'll remember, Ramses' name was Usumatre. It was a Greek corruption. They heard Usumatre and they said Ozymandias. And that's how Shelley knew the name. So Ramses the Great became Ozymandias of the famous poem. So Ramses, early in his career, establishes himself as a great builder. Ramesseum, Abu Simbel. He builds his own temple at Abydos, completes the Hypostyle Hall, completes his father's temple, does it all. Military, marches out to Kadesh, holds off the army single-handedly. He's established. But then, this is only the beginning of his career. Something happens, almost a midlife crisis, that changes Ramsay's career radically. But we'll talk about that next time. See you then.